Treason, sedition, rebellion. This is the heritage of the American Patriot. Those revolutionaries who stood on principle to fight against tyranny no matter the cost. And that spirit lives strong today in the activists and freedom fighters who fight against the authoritarian state. Each in their own way, each with their own mission, united for the cause of freedom.
I had the idea to run on a platform of fuck the police prior to actually winning the primary.
I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
They said, you don't get to tell us no, we're the state health department, and I said, hell no.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
People already pushing back in ways that didn't even need any votes to be cast.
I'm not ratting on anybody, and I did what I did, so you're gonna have to give me what the law says you have to give.
You wanna make the world a better place? Have some babies, and raise them to not be stupid.
Hope I don't get canceled. Talk to you.
These are the people whose stories I'm here to share. I'm Justin O'Donnell, and this is Submersive.
Man, governments are not gonna like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, anarchists, and people of the internet, people who follow, people who watch, thank you so much for tuning in to Subversive 76. As always, I'm Justin O'Donnell, host of the show. And before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether that's YouTube Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor, or on LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and most of all, sharing the content with your friends. Now, if you enjoy this content, you can join our production team and the insurgency by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell. And make sure to check out our sponsor, snackswag.com, where you can get all your favorite official Subversive podcast merch, including some brand new designs for our t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, and more at snackswag.com. They also do the fulfillment for our mug club if you want to join our Patreon at one of the higher tiers. So head on over to snackswag.com and get some merch where you can literally wear your opinions and your principles on your sleeve. Now, if you want to keep in touch between shows, follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. The links can be found in the description for the link tree where you can keep in touch at all locations in all of our groups, and it'll be in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, so go make sure to check that out today. Now, there's been a lot going on lately, and a lot of things I want to address, a lot of things I want to talk about. And this is going to be a unique show, a different kind of a show. I don't have a guest tonight. I didn't want to book a guest tonight. There was a lot of things evolving in the current climate and politics here in New Hampshire and just, you know, life in general that are worth discussing and worth talking about. And I spent the past couple of days just kind of jotting out a list of things I wanted to bring up, talk about, spend upon. And then that list kept changing as things happened. And it's in no particular order, but I think first and foremost, I wanted to bring up something that happened with our Patreon, with our insurgency. We actually lost a couple of members of the insurgency who chose they no longer would continue with the Patreon. And that's fine. Patrons come, patrons go. Everyone's circumstances change. Not everyone can afford to support the creators they like at any time. Not everyone can afford to do so financially beyond just liking, watching, subscribing, commenting. This show will never be behind a paywall. This show will always be available because the reason I do this show is for me. And the fact that people enjoy watching it is just a bonus. But one of the beautiful things about Patreon as a platform is their exit survey process. And that they do actually have a process where they ask anybody who leaves a Patreon account the reason they're leaving a Patreon account. And one of our supporters that left had left this message on Patreon that they were leaving because they are troubled by the Fed posting on Twitter. Now, plenty of great reasons to leave Patreon. You can't afford it. Rent's due. The economy's in the shitter. Housing prices are through the roof. It's difficult and expensive. Food shortages are coming. We'll get that. Trust me. Never put Patreon before your own happiness. Never put Patreon before your own subsistence. Never support a creator before you can support yourself. Absolutely. But if you had ever gotten to the point of subscribing to my Patreon in the first place, and it was being troubled by the content I posted on Twitter that finally did you in and made you leave, I'm just terrified at what possessed you to think you belonged there in the first place. I'm kind of known for my Twitter shitposting content. That's kind of what I do. That's kind of how a lot of you ended up here and a lot of you ended up listening. In particular, this came directly after 4th of July. And on 4th of July, I did a little bit of so-called Fed posting. I posted an article to my Substack about basically January 6th didn't go far enough. How it wasn't the revolution we needed, but the revolution we deserved, but it was a revolution that happened. It was a failed, piss-poor attempt at doing nothing anyways, because it was a bunch of senile grandmothers LARPing cowboy costumes, and a man in a buffalo suit who just took a guided tour of the Capitol building. But in the meantime, the members of Congress were terrified. And that's a good thing to me. I personally think that's a really good thing. When members of Congress, when the ruling class and the elite in this country are willing to openly admit that they are scared of the people they're supposed to rule, the people they're supposed to hold themselves above. So while there's hundreds of possible reasons you should quit my Patreon, if it doesn't work for you and if it's affecting your life, or even if you just decide the content's not for you anymore. But because I ship, and that was I have literally on Twitter said things like Timothy McVeigh did nothing wrong, and that was well before anyone joined my Patreon. So if by 4th of July shit posting took you by surprise, I'm sorry, but you didn't belong here in the first place. Now I will say Patreon does allow you to sign up under anonymous names. I don't know who it was. I would have loved to reach out to them individually. I did have a couple anonymous subscribers for a long time. I still have a couple anonymous. I don't know who they are, but they are no longer members of the insurgency. And this leads me into my point, like I came to today. And the reality is one of the identity struggles the Libertarian Party and the Liberty Movement have been having has been about where do we draw the line with our shit posting, with our social media topics, with the way we hold political discussion and conversation today, where this has been the identity crisis in the Libertarian Party for sure. The battle between the pragmatist caucuses and the Mises caucus about radical and bold messaging and whether or not what we're saying crosses the line. And what's mind-blowing to me is at no point did anybody ever accuse the Mises caucus of saying things that were unlibertarian. They accused them of saying things in a way that non-libertarians would be turned off by. And that's when it finally clicked with me. In order, like, if you can't say what you mean, if you can't espouse your principles loudly and proudly, then that means that you don't care about them as much as you care about being viewed and perceived in a certain manner by those who are watching you. And if you care more about the opinions of others, then you're not principled. You're a populist. Your opinions and your principles and how you deliver your message and what you fight for will shift and will change with what's popular over time. And that's an unacceptable position to lead from. And what I've been saying on Twitter has been my principles. I've made no shy claim in the past couple of years that I don't necessarily accept the non-aggression principle as a guiding libertarian philosophy. I don't believe that rejecting the idea of political violence is necessary to call yourself a libertarian. I don't believe that a true revolution that sees human freedom and human liberty survive to the future can happen necessarily in a non-violent, peaceful manner. As we've seen, every revolution that we've ever seen be successful, social, political, or cultural, has had a component of violence to it. And we're often taught in public schools that, well, you should espouse to be like Martin Luther King. Well, Martin Luther King's entire basis of his protest was willingly and knowingly violating private property rights, and every nonviolent action they took was backed by the threat of explicit force from the Black Panthers and other militant groups who were willing to do violence on their behalf. But that part's not taught in American education anymore. We're taught to believe that the government gave to nonviolent, peaceable social revolutions rather than to the threat of inherent violence. If you don't remember, Ronald Reagan, the saint of the right, the champion of the NRA, was the father of a modern gun control when he passed gun control as governor of California because he was afraid of the Black Panthers, who were militant extremists who threatened to use violence explicitly in California to protect and defend their neighborhoods from white police officers. So when I'm accused of Fed posting, for supporting the notion of resistance, for supporting the possibility of political violence being necessary in the future. And I'm not encouraging anyone to go do it now, but by God, will it become necessary at some point if we don't do something now? That's not Fed posting. And the term Fed posting itself really bothers me because it's a psychological trigger. It's a psyop where the libertarian movement, with its emphasis on nonviolence, and the liberty movement with the non-aggression principle, the Libertarian Party's pledge, has been conditioned over decades to police our own in a psyop of against resistance against the state. Whenever anybody speaks up about actually resisting against the state, we accuse them of being a Fed poster trying to entrap people into bad action. Whenever somebody tries to engage in action against the state for the prosperation of liberty and the advancement of liberty, we accuse them of being a Fed or being an agent or being an asset of the Feds who's doing it to make us look bad. Whenever any action is actually taken that threatens to fight back against the state, libertarians are the first to accuse it of being a CIA, NSA, FBI plot to discredit the liberty movement. But the very fact that you're not willing to support resistance in any and all of its forms is a discredit to the libertarian movement, because if you accept that that the state deems to be your overlord and deems to be your master, then any doctrine of non-resistance is a forfeiture of your human liberty. So it's not Fed posting. It's sticking true to the principles of freedom and encouraging people who stand at any time to grip their freedom, to grasp their freedom, and to never let it slip. And for those of you who aren't aware, Porkfest is a couple weeks ago. I get to go up to Porkfest, as I do every year, or at least I attempt to every year. And I didn't get to go for the full week this year, but I did make it up for the best event of the year, Soapbox Idol. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Soapbox Idol, it is this fantastic event. It's the penultimate event of Porkfest prior to the last comedy show where everyone goes home, where on Saturday night, the best ranters, the best arguers, the people with the best points and radical positions to take stand up on stage, stand up on a soapbox and they rant. They get 3 minutes, any topic, no rules, to just tell a crowd what they think about something. And it's supposed to be limited to 12 competitors, but of course, Carla Garrick, the amazing person that she is, can never narrow down that crowd to just 12 competitors. So she always lets more and more and more. So what we do is I get up there, I get dragged in by Masha Rothbardian, for those of you on Twitter who know her, and AJ Olding, friend of the show, convinced me that I have to audition, I have to do Soapbox Idol, and I have no desire to do this, no inclination, want in the world to do this. I am exhausted. I did an all-nighter. We partied. We watched the sunrise in the mountains, and then I'm being told I have to go audition for a ranting competition, and I just went down there and told them that I thought the whole audition process was retarded and stupid, and it was destroying the spirit of the exercise, and that was a good enough audition to get in. But it came 6 o'clock that night, and I still had no clue what I was going to rant about until I was walking up on stage, and then it hit me as I was listening to other people's rants. I was listening to people give prepared statements, poems that they'd written, rants that they'd been working on perfecting for over a year, knowing Soapbox Idol was going to come up, delivered in perfect rhyme and meter. People weren't ranting. They weren't ranting about anything controversial, nothing that belonged on a soapbox. They were speaking to an echo chamber of people who agreed with them. So I figured I'd do something different. I would speak to this group of people who espouse nonviolence and peaceful voluntary society and peaceful living and nonviolent secession and a peaceful coexistence with other states and other alternatives. And I would give them something a little bit unique. And now, if I don't say so myself, I'm a pretty good ranter. This was not my best performance by any means. I thought it was actually pretty terrible, but we're going to give it a listen right now.
Has anybody ever in here ever heard a good law? I'm going to read you one real quick, so fucking bear with me. Government being instituted for the common benefit, protection, and security of the whole community and not for the private interest emolument of any one man, family, or class of men. Therefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted and public liberty manifestly endangered and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may and of right ought to reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind. That's what? Article 10 of your New Hampshire Constitution. Now the first half there, government being instituted, for who gives a shit, it's a fucking waste of time anyways. But the second half and the sentiment is that when it no longer serves your ends as the people, fucking kill it. On January 6, 2020, for the first time in my life, I woke up to news that gave me hope for the future of this country. As elderly senile grandmothers and LARPers and men dressed in a buffalo costume took the halls of Congress hostage, not knowing what to do with their captured prize, members of Congress cowered, fled, and cried in fear of the people they governed. And for the first and only time in the 32 years I've been alive, the American people had a direct and immediate admission from those that rule them that they are afraid. That you have the power. That you can remove them at any time.
Now, in hindsight, I was exhausted. I could have done much better. Had I prepared even a little bit, I could have done better with that rant. And really, it is something I have a lot to say about. I've talked with Reed Coverdale at length about it. For those of you who watch the Naturalist Capitalist show or Tower Gang, Reed and I are of the same opinion that January 6th was a disaster. It was a shit show of epic proportions. It accomplished nothing. It was a bunch of people who accomplished nothing and had no plan and no clue what they were doing. And that's really the sad part, is because they expose the greatest weakness of government, and that's fear of the governed. And that's something that we haven't had a direct admission of in the history of this country. Not since Thomas Jefferson wrote his letter to William Smith, but the Tree of Liberty needing to be refreshed. And God forsake us if it goes 20 such years without such a rebellion, referring to the post-Revolutionary War uprisings in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. Like, once upon a time, people considered revolt against the government to be a good thing because it kept the power of tyrants in check. But not anymore. Now we're, people are slavish. People are complacent. People aren't willing to take a stand for their own freedom. People aren't willing to stand up and fight for what they need to, for their own freedom. And that brings me to what I read there at the beginning of that rant. And I did go up as I was walking up to the soapbox and I said, I'm going to read this thing. I'm going to start here. For those of you who aren't familiar, this is Article 10 of the New Hampshire Constitution. For those of you who don't live there, the New Hampshire Constitution is a pretty lengthy document. It's not short by any means. It's got tons of different articles. It's wide-ranging. Our Bill of Rights is extensive. And it predates the U.S. Constitution. It's actually older than the U.S. Constitution. It's older than the American Constitution and the New Hampshire Constitution. To me, is more endearing and more deserving of my loyalty and my adherence to the U.S. Constitution, which has been perverted by corrupt judicial systems such as the Supreme Court. But Article 10, even right in our Constitution, it is named as your right of revolution. We have a right to revolt. It's enshrined in our legal documents. The revolution is a right withheld by the people. And this text does read, and I'll read it for you here a little bit more calmly than I did on the soapbox. Government being instituted for the common benefit, protection, and security of the whole community, and not for the private interest or emolument of any one man, family, or class of men. Therefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted and public liberty manifestly endangered, and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may and ought to reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind. To me, this law is the most beautiful piece of prose ever composed in the English language. This law this piece of legal doctrine enshrined in the New Hampshire State Constitution reserves the right of liberty to the individual, to the man, and to the community, and not to the government to bestow upon them. This law singularly recognizes that your rights are natural and negative. They can only be taken from you, not gifted to you, because you always possess the right to take them back. That is your right of revolution. That is your right to revolt. That is your right to cast off your chains as a slave and to kill your masters. Now, I don't mean that literally. I don't use this as a call for the inducement of violence. A revolt and a revolution can take many different forms. Many argue that this is exercised every 2 years at our ballot box, where we have cast off 200 state representatives and change them out for new ones every 2 years, or every 6 or 7 years when we finally get sick of a governor and cast them out here in New Hampshire, that our revolt has been exercised. But it is not, because that is just simply a means of redress. One of my favorite lines in the whole Constitution, again, this whole amendment, is it? But the article of enaction for this is that whenever all the other means of redress are ineffectual, not withhold, not denied, but ineffectual, is left to the individual to decide when the government has ignored them, when the government's means of addressing their grievances has been ineffectual. The government can't say, we heard your appeal and denied it. No, that was ineffectual. My appeal is to heaven and to the power above, to the individual, to myself, not to you, the state. And this is incredible to me, that at one point in our history, men, our forefathers, our ancestors, for many of us, understood the dangers present in any government becoming tyrannical, and decided if they were going to draft a set of laws to govern their nation, they must include a clause of right to revolution, your right to cast off your chains. And they understood implicitly that it need not be a nonviolent revolt, need not be a peaceful transition of power. As Thomas Jefferson said, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike, for that's its natural manure. Article 10, the right of revolution, says the doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind. You cannot escape the tyranny of the state by simply refusing to acknowledge its existence. You cannot restore your freedoms and preserve your liberty by pretending they exist. You cannot write off the opportunity and option to resist at all opportunities. I call myself an agorist, not a capitalist. Agorism is a practice of black markets, a practice of gray markets. It is in itself an act of resistance against the state monopoly on force engaged in commerce. But make no mind, that puts a target on my back. It's a target I'm willing to bear, I'm willing to risk, but I'm also willing to die for. And that's what I think a lot of people don't realize, is if you're going to be a political activist, and if you're going to threaten to change and challenge the system as it stands and as it threatens to continuously enslave you, you must be ready to die for your beliefs. Because otherwise, if you're not going to defend them, they're not your beliefs. We'll circle back. If you're not willing to speak them loudly and proudly and defend them with your last dying breath, they're subject to change. They're subject to persuasion. They're not firmly held beliefs. They're not firmly gripped values. Now, the argument that might change your mind is a 9mm Glock in the hands of a local police officer, or a new SIG MCX M5 in the hands of an 18-year-old National Guardsman, or the threat of nuclear weapons from Congressman Sowell from Colorado. Or maybe it's mean tweets of Donald Trump and derangement syndrome. But if something can change your mind on your principles so drastically, that you're not willing to stand among them. And if you're not standing firmly and strongly among them, then you cannot thrive. You cannot survive. You cannot be free. You are a slave. And not everybody yearns for freedom. Everyone's values are different. Some people are comfortable as slaves. But those of us who aren't comfortable as slaves, we do have two different ways we can approach the notion of fixing our slavery. Defend 223 in the comments says, it only takes 3%. You're right, it only takes 3%, but I actually wager it takes less than that. It takes 1%. Because there's an often quoted statistic that only 3% of Americans fought in the Revolutionary War. What they don't tell you is that 3% of Americans fought in the Revolutionary War split between those who joined either side, and a fair number were still loyalists to the British crown. It was far less than 3% who actually took up arms and fought for their independence, liberty, and freedom in this country. The vast majority of Americans did not care. They did not care if Washington was their king. They did not care if George was their king. They did not care if America had a Congress. They did not care if Virginia and New York were independent countries or states unified. They did not care. Their lives were unaffected. Their livelihoods were unaffected. They went on as if nothing happened. Except there was a war in their backyards. But you know what? They made it through the winter. And that's all that actually mattered to the majority of people. The majority of people are comfortable in their slavery. You can't expect them to join you. You can't expect them to share your values. You cannot expect them to vote for you if they don't share your values. Because you can't change their minds on what liberty and freedom means if they have a fundamentally different value structure than you. You value freedom. You value liberty. That's something you came to. And a set of circumstances in your life, in your upbringing, and in your moral and philosophical code led you to that understanding. They had a different path. They're comfortable with the path they've chosen, with the path they live on. And that shouldn't even scare you because they're the sheep. If you give them freedom, they'll take it. They'll thrive under it even. New businessmen, they'll prosper, they'll innovate, they'll invent, they'll grow, they'll invest. If you don't give them freedom, they'll try and do all that anyways, and they'll just follow the rules to do it. It matters not to them whether or not they're free or enslaved, as long as there's food on their table at the end of the night. But how do we end slavery? Well, first, you have to realize that there's a need to end slavery. And a funny story. Prior to the Civil War in the United States, there was an institution of chattel slavery where a man was kept in bondage, where one man would own another man. Quite directly, quite literally, not hidden and enshrined in banking institutions, mortgage liens, and generational debt, and social security fraud. That wasn't how they owned them. They literally put chains on them. Literally, this. When we make metaphors and references to the chains of our bondage and our slavery, we're referencing the history of the racist past of the United States of America, where once upon a time, people of color, black men and women, were put on boats and chains and shipped from Africa and sold as property and used as tools, as farm equipment, as cattle, and traded as less than human. It was a gross, despicable, and detestable part of not just American, but of human history. So unfortunately, a practice that still continues today throughout the world. The United States is actually one of the bastions of freedom when it comes to this. In Europe, sex slavery is rampant. In Africa, physical slavery, much like what we had prior to the Civil War in the U.S., is rampant. In China, they kidnap children and force them into sex slavery. It's atrocious, and it is the norm in the world. In fact, there are more geographic jurisdictions where slavery is practiced than outlawed. Outlawed everywhere, but still practiced in most of these places. So don't ever say that slavery ended, because it didn't. It just got different. It evolved and became more subtle. But how do we end slavery? If you want to end slavery, you must first actually decide you want to end it. Because most people don't. Prior to the Civil War, there was two different groups of abolitionists in the United States who were offended by slavery. the first of these two groups, it was a very powerful group, mostly based out of Massachusetts and Connecticut, with very wealthy donors helping form the Republican Party, where they wanted to end slavery because they were astonished and disgusted by the institution of slavery and the practice of slavery, because within the practice of slavery and the institutions and how they existed, slaves were treated so poorly. Their families were separated. They weren't clothed. They weren't fed properly. They were treated inhumanely. And all of these are really, really good reasons to be upset with slavery. And this group sought to change the law to improve the conditions of slaves and to make the slaves' lives better, to get them better clothes, to make sure their families couldn't be split up, to make sure that they were treated better with compassion as human beings, because they deserved to be treated like human beings, but still kept as slaves. That was a bridge too far. That was too radical to abolish slavery. We must take things pragmatically, one step at a time. Let's first improve the conditions of the slaves so they have a better quality of life. The second group of people, they abhorred and were disgusted not just by the institution of slavery, but by that first group of people. Because it's fucking disgusting the way they went about attempting to abolish slavery, not by abolishing it, but by taking baby steps and incremental progress towards improving the lives of the slaves while reducing their incentive to revolt against their masters, by conditioning them to be okay with slavery, by brainwashing them with better treatment, food, education systems that taught them to believe they were okay with being slaves, keeping their families together to keep them with something to lose if they revolted against the slavery. That first group of people, in their attempts to improve the lives of the slaves, reinforced the institution of slavery to a point where it took a war that cost hundreds of thousands of lives to end. That second group of people knew this would happen. That second group of people knew that pragmatism, a step-by-step approach, was not the path to abolishing slavery. The only path to abolishing slavery was to abolish slavery, to make illegal, to free each man from the bondage of another, to say that no man could own another as chattel or as property. Because it didn't matter how good your life is. It didn't matter that you could read. It didn't matter that you were fed. Didn't matter to them that your family was kept together, that you had decent clothes and a place to sleep each night, because you were a slave. And that was disgusting, and that was unacceptable to them. So the difference between libertarians and anarchists, really. Libertarians recognize that people are slaves to the state and want to work within the system to improve the quality of life that each individual has within this system of slavery. Whereas an anarchist recognizes that each individual held in bondage to the state's banking systems and social security systems and held at the end of a gun with the state monopoly on violence using militarized police forces is a slave. And no amount of comfort will change the fact that they are a slave. No amount of wealth will change the fact that they are a slave. No amount of food, clothing, comfort, and togetherness, no amount of sex, no amount of drugs, no amount of TV, bread and circuses, the NFL, the MLB, NHL, no amount of Super Bowl halftime shows will change that they're a slave. The only thing that will change the matter of their enslavement is the abolition of the systems that enslave them. And that's where your anarchists are right. You will forever be a system, you will forever be a slave to the systems of the state until the systems of the state are abolished. And that's where Article 10 is right. Any doctrine of non-resistance against the arbitrary power of oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind, because the good and happiness of mankind is freedom, liberty, and the escape of slavery. But if all of this is too radical for you, if it's too much of a hot take, if it scares the voters you think you're going to win over with your passive-aggressive decriminalized marijuana bill, if it scares the voters you're courting with your legalized sex work and normalized transgender rights bills, if it scares the voters who still want to put their kids in public schools where they're brainwashed for 8 hours a day and forced to recite nationalistic pledges, if it scares those voters, if I'm too radical that I hurt your chances of being elected to improve the conditions of my slavery, by all means, fuck off. I don't need your money. I don't need your support. I don't need you holding me back. I don't need your company. I don't need your companionship. And I certainly don't need your backup, because it won't be reliable when the state sends a man with a gun to tell me I must return to my stable as a slave, because I don't trust your principles to not shift back with that gun. But if this isn't radical enough for you, if you think maybe we need to take it further, maybe actively pursue the abolition of slavery, actively pursue the destruction of the state apparatuses which have enslaved us and destroyed our happiness and good lives, then hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, leave a comment in the video. Follow the link tree and join the insurgency on Patreon. Because that's where we're going to get real freaky. That's where we're going to get real radical. Putting together a new series of members-only content. It'll be available there for those who have supported me, for those who aren't turned off by what I have to say, and those who want to hear it enough. That said, there's more to be said. I've gotten through one point in my list of checkpoints to make: the right to revolution, the need to revolt. But there's other topics to discuss, other things going on. For those of you not familiar, I'm very active with the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. I'm very active with the Free State Project in New Hampshire. I'm very active with a bunch of Liberty Republican candidates in New Hampshire. I'm very active in the political sphere. I've been called a pragmatist because I was willing to engage in politics, but the only way I can abolish the systems of slavery is by understanding how they work. You can't abolish something if you don't know what they're going to use to defend themselves, and unfortunately, it's a learning process inside, so we can figure out how to do that. In New Hampshire, we are having great chances and great strides because we're improving liberty and we're improving freedom, not by increasing our petty comforts, but by rolling back the powers of the state, by eliminating apparatuses of the state, by eliminating powers of the state to infringe upon people's natural freedoms and natural rights. We are, bit by bit, rolling back the apparatus of slavery with the Free State Project Liberty Movement in New Hampshire. And that is why I'm here, and that's why I invite you here. You visit FSP.org to learn more about it. It's fantastic. It's great. But that being said, I've noticed a big problem with libertarians here in New Hampshire. When it comes to doing activism, for those of you not aware, a lot of the drama in the Libertarian Party, for those of you watching, the Reno Reset, the Great Awakening of the Mises Caucus, the Ron Paul Revolution 2.0, taking over the liberty movement in this country, recently stirred the waves and made waves and made a lot of people really excited about the uptick in what was supposed to be activism, the uptick in what was supposed to be a new wave of liberty activism to take this country by storm, as Michael Hyson and the Mises Caucus embraced Ron Paul libertarians and liberty conservatives back to the liberty movement. I'll admit, I got excited for a bit myself, because as someone who's been involved in the Libertarian Party for quite a long time, longer than most people would consider healthy, normal, or sane, I did find myself wanting for more, hoping for something different, because God, was it difficult being one of the only people who'd ever do a goddamn thing in the state. And, well, there's a lot of liberty activism that needs doing. Well, there's a lot of libertarian activism that gets done. There's not a lot of people that do it. Anybody who's been involved in the Libertarian Party for any amount of time understands the need for petition drives, ballot access. It's the heart and soul of what the Libertarian Party really does. Giving people a choice on the ballot, putting candidates up for public office, fighting to be heard and to be seen in that electoral process and to have a say in the future of this country. They want to improve the conditions of our slavery. In order to do that, they have to play the game. Petition drives aren't easy. They take thousands of man hours and a whole lot more effort than anyone's really willing to give it. They cost money. Libertarians are notoriously bad at raising money. You know, for a lot of people who preach the free market, we sure are a poor bunch, or at least a stingy bunch. For a lot of people who preach private charity and replacing the government, we really don't like to give up our dollars or satoshis. But that being said, when the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus took over the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire 2 years ago, I was a little bit excited. Not going to lie, I got a little chubby there, because a whole bunch of people showed up to convention and they were like, we're going to do activism. We're going to get involved. We're going to do the things. We're here and we're pissed and we're mad because nobody's doing the things. And the nobody they pointed at was Richard Mansell, Nicholas Sarwark, Shalita Jarvis, the old guard of the party, people like Daryl Perry, who talked a lot and did really fucking nothing. And I got excited because this might mean I won't be the only one doing anything. That's fucking crazy to me. A petition drive might happen with more than just me. And when they decided to run candidates for office, they recruited me to help with the petition drive. And I said, okay, I have some conditions. And they promised me, you know, we're going to have at least 50 volunteers. This, like, they can do petitioning, blah, 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 blah. Here we are 6 months later, and our petition drive's not done. And we're struggling. We're barely getting there. It's hard. It's difficult. It's hard to admit this. It's hard to talk openly about it because it's been really stressful. It's been every weekend for May, June, July, every weekend for 4.5 months, sacrificed for the cause of a libertarian candidate in the hopes he might get 4%, so that if he might get 4%, we can have a primary in 2 years, and if we have the primary in 2 years, we might be able to fuse some candidates, and a long shot to liberty through the pragmatic approach. But you know what? Well, I want to abolish the systems of slavery. If other people are intent on making me more comfortable in my chains, I'll give assistance and aid to anybody willing to have a fight, anyone willing to put up a fight, because they're the only ones engaging in resistance, and the resistance is what matters if we come back to it. But then I realized a lot of people not doing things that they promised to do, and a lot of people in the Liberty Movement, a lot of people in the Libertarian Party, a lot of people in the Free State Project don't really do all that much. They talk a lot, they brag a lot, they love to give accolades to each other for the titles they've earned and the shit they've said they're going to do, but when it comes to doing it, they don't. Don't get me wrong, there are some studs, some standouts out there. People like Masha, who petitions every weekend. People like Mark Warden, who's one of the best legislators New Hampshire's ever had. People like Carla Garrick, who's all over the country, all over the state, every weekend. People like Zephyn Woods, who's on 100 different projects at a time. People like Dennis Pratt, who's building new systems, projects, and infrastructure to get people to New Hampshire. There are some great doers out there, people who are doing amazing things, but there's, for every one of them, there's 20 people who just sit in a Signal group chat and circle jerk each other off about how great other people made their lives. And that's their whole fucking personality. I'm sorry, but I struggle to get along with a lot of libertarians in the Libertarian Party. Because that's their whole fucking personality. Most of you are worse than that 36-year-old woman who identifies as a Hufflepuff. You're so one fucking dimensional that there's nothing interesting about you. The reason you're not getting elected, the reason you're not creating any meaningful change, is because you have no ties to your community. You haven't engaged with anyone outside your circle jerk of libertarian meacocks in a Signal chat. You haven't actually done anything or lifted a goddamn finger to convince anyone to support you. And that doesn't go just for Mises Caucus libertarians. That goes for all Libertarian Party members. I'm sorry, but y'all need to get a fucking hobby. Because simping and sucking up for that one cute chick from fucking Arkansas is not going to get you fucking laid. White knighting for every fucking self-identified libertarian female in a Facebook group isn't going to get you a fucking trad wife. And bitching and moaning about what happens with those who want to do activism are doing it without you and they don't do it up to your fucking standards, I'm sorry, but that doesn't make me or you any freer. Kurt in chat says, the overwhelming majority of the human race has done nothing with their lives. You're absolutely fucking right, Kurt. But the overwhelming majority of the human race is also comfortable with their lives. These are people who ostensibly aren't comfortable. These are people who ostensibly want freedom, want liberty, who want a world where they and their children can thrive, but they haven't done fucking anything. Now, Kurt's one of those standouts I talked about. Anytime somebody moves to New Hampshire, whether or not they're to do anything, we don't know if they're going to do anything until they've been here for a while. But regardless, Kurt goes out of his way. Make sure they get moved in. Kurt goes out of their way to make sure that they're comfortable and integrated into this community where they have an opportunity and a chance. But I'm sorry. If your whole life is so dedicated to politics that you have no other fucking personality, you will fail. Get a fucking hobby. Meet some normal people. Get out of your echo chambers. Get off YouTube. Get off Twitter. Go out to a local meetup. Meet some professional colleagues. Go out for drinks with your work friends. Develop a social circle that's not built around your politics. And maybe you'll start to understand why normal people don't fucking like you and why you're not winning. This is going to turn a lot of people off. It's a shot across the bow. I'm not naming names. I'm not going to pull a Lauren Southern and drop a 3-hour expose on how fucking awful every last one of you is and all the fucking awful shit you've done. Because let's be honest, it's not all that awful lost shit. Or else you just don't do anything. Like Kurt said, the vast majority of the human race has done nothing while all progress is accomplished by dissatisfied people. I fucking love that quote. I'm taxing the shit out of it, Kurt. But I invoked Lauren Southern there. She's in the description. I wanted to talk about Lauren Southern. Fuck! Last night was interesting. I watched Lauren Southern's new movie. She just released it yesterday. It came out of the war blue. Nobody was expecting it, at least to my knowledge. And I'm pretty plugged into dissident right conservative media on Twitter. Nobody knew that was going to fucking happen. Nobody knew that Lauren Southern was going to just out of the blue publish a 3-hour video to YouTube. The names, posted receipts, screenshots going back a decade. And tearing down everyone you ever admired on the dissident right. Paul Joseph Watson, Milo Yiannopoulos, that fucking dumbass dude from London who... I watched a movie last night. I can't remember his name, but he just really fucking hates Muslims for some reason. God, they were eviscerated. And she had the receipts. And it wasn't really anything unexpected. Like, I'm sitting there watching it. I'm like, nothing she's accusing Milo Yiannopoulos of is remotely difficult to believe. Let's just put it that way. I watched this documentary and every accusation Lauren Southern came out with, I'm like, yeah, no, that just fucking makes sense. I don't know if it's maybe that I've been involved in libertarian politics at the highest levels. I've been a member of the Libertarian National Committee. I've been on the board of directors of 2 different state parties. I've been a candidate for federal office. I've been involved with super PACs. And I'm very familiar with libertarian alternative media backgrounds. I know people like Reed Coverdale, Philip Bont, Larry Sharp, Spike Cohen. These are all people I have personal one-on-one conversations with. I just get it. I think what Lauren Southern surprises, she assumed the Democrats were like this and never imagined that there could be corruption, grift, graft, and fraud in the background of the dissident rights media, alternative media. When reality is, they're just people. People suck. Doesn't matter what their political views are, because guess what? Politics isn't a personality. And most people have a personality that sucks. And when you take a person with a shitty personality and you put them in a position of influence, they're going to use it to further their own agenda, their own image, their own self-gratification. They don't care about what they stand for. And most of them don't stand for anything. And the old question is, if you stand for nothing, what will you fall for? A fucking stiff breeze might do it in reality with most people in the political commentary sphere. Now, myself included, like, I've not been tested. I've not had a stack on my door. I got a big fucking mouth. I run a lot of fucking hot takes and fucking angry words out of my mouth, encouraging the state to fucking have every reason to come after me, but I haven't been tested. I say you should have a reason to die. I say you should have a reason to live. But neither of mine have been tested. So who knows what I'll stand for? Who knows what I'll fall for? Might be a sheriff's deputy. It might be a National Guard platoon. Who the fuck knows? It might just be a subpoena from a grand jury. Or maybe one day I'll have kids and no longer be willing to risk them. Everyone's got a line somewhere. I haven't found mine yet. But you really should find yours. I'm still looking. But the big takeaway I took away from Lauren Southern's movie was that, well, the infighting, the drama, the toxicity, the petty personality struggles, the cult of personality that is alternative media with people like Milo Yiannopoulos, Paul Joseph Watson, Alex Jones, Tim Pool, herself, Lauren Southern, Faye, Johnson, Boris, everyone else involved in that scene eventually turned on each other. They blackmailed each other, defrauded each other, turned against each other, and tried to sabotage each other because it became about self-aggrandizement rather than about the mission, about the politics, because they were just shitty people who shared politics. Libertarians are largely just shitty people who share politics. They just share better politics, in my opinion. But all these people, had they been principled, had they stood on firm ground, had the potential to change the world. The dissident right media was a powerful force, if you remember it. The dissident rights media had the potential to change the world. Lauren Southern revolutionized on the ground reporting. Tim Pool, following in her footsteps, revolutionized frontline coverage. Alex Jones revolutionized controversial thought. Rebel Media brought to the forefront controversial programming and combative programming. Well, like, they did change the world. They changed the world to a world where we thought we had a chance, where any independent asshole with a camera could call himself a journalist. And that's really tested the First Amendment. If any asshole with a camera can call himself a journalist, what are the limits on the First Amendment? There can't be any. Because now you're infringing on the press, because I'm the press. I have syndication. I have publishing credentials. I'm press. Censoring me is a violation of the First Amendment. But if censoring me is a violation of the First Amendment, why is censoring anyone else okay? Because the only thing preventing them from doing what I do is taking a couple hours to set it up. But aside from this potential to change the world, the only realized potential the dissident right alternative media had was destroying themselves, turning against themselves, letting each of their ambitions get in the way of their principles to the point where they drove each other to become enemies. Where Milo Yiannopoulos became so fanatical about being the center focus of everything to do with the center right that he was willing to sabotage, tank, and destroy anyone else who didn't include him or put him ahead of them. This self-destructive, self-sabotaging mentality. When I watched this, I tried to watch it, and at one point I started ignoring the names when she would accuse Milo of something or accuse Paul Joseph Watson of something or accuse anyone of something in the movie. I just ignored the names and just thought of the actions. And I can see them happening in the Libertarian Party. I can see them happening in the Democratic Party. Lauren Southern seemed confused and astonished that this could happen in the conservative dissident right. And to me, they're just people. And people suck. That's about the end of my notes. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I actually didn't expect this to go the full hour. I honestly thought here I'd ramble off some few notes, have a little things to say, and be done in 20 minutes and be on with the night and hope that somebody liked it. But the reality is I got pissed off. And I had a lot to say. Because we are slaves. We aren't free. It's a constant struggle. But it's a struggle I'm proud to enjoy. It's a struggle I'm proud to work with. It's a struggle I'm proud to fight. And I do now feel a need to actually thank those of you who have joined the insurgency, those of you who do support me on Patreon, Stefan Kinsella, Jeremy S., Mike Dalgish, Jeremy Kaufman, Robert Daniel, Joseph Richard, Bernie Gracie, Antonio Spaghetti. Y'all are the real MVPs. Y'all are the ones who make this happen. Keep this up. I don't do it for you, but I'm happy that you enjoy it enough to support what I do. Make sure you hit that link in the description, SoundLinktree. You can go visit the Insurgency on patreon.com/O'Donnell. You can listen to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, wherever else you want to download it, add it to your queue. You can hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube, hit that big subscribe button on Odyssey. Leave a tip. Tell us what you want to hear about next time. If you're not in the Patreon, you're thinking about joining the Patreon of the Insurgency, tell me what kind of content you'd like to see, what kind of perks you'd like to see in the Patreon. Because I'm trying to build that experience. I'm trying to make that something that's more beneficial for those in it. It helps keep the show afloat, pays the bills, keeps the lights on. I want you to get something out of it too. Make sure you head over to snackswag.com. Get your sponsored merch. Again, they are fantastic. Go to snackswag.com for all your featured sponsored merch, official Libertarian Party, Subversive Podcast merch, some unofficial Libertarian Party merch, some unofficial Rogue Campaign merch, and others. Make sure you head over to the Free State Project channel, FS Free State Project NH, all one word on YouTube. Give those a subscribe. Check out the rest of the soapbox. I don't rant since they're going to be dropping in the next few weeks. There was some great content there, even though most of it was rehearsed. And give a follow. Give a subscribe. Hit me up on Twitter. Tell me what you think. If you want me to get worse, I can always get worse. If you want me to get better, I'm not sure we're in the right time frame. It's been a pleasure. It's been a blast. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'm going to go do an article. I don't know how I'm going to piece this together. I don't know how I'm going to put this together in an article that makes sense. But I'm going to. And if you're not in the Substack, we get an email out every Wednesday morning. Hear my thoughts. Hear my takes. Hear my summary of the previous night's show. Again, that link is in the link tree in the description. Head on over to Substack and give a subscribe. And most of all, before I sign off tonight, remember, all of your rights are natural. All of your rights you're born with. Your rights are not granted by government, but they're granted by whatever God you believe in. And first and foremost of those rights is your right to revolution. Because it alone allows you to seize the rest when they're withheld. Thank you, everybody. You are fantastic. Thank you for sticking with me this whole hour. And until next time, be free. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Subversive. Make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live on YouTube. And make sure to leave some comments and reviews on whatever platform you listen on to let me know what you thought of this episode. And a huge thanks and shout out to our sponsors and the awesome members of the Insurgency on Patreon. If you enjoyed this content, you can join the Insurgency on Patreon by following the links in the description for patreon.com/odama. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast every day. So until next time, everybody, be free.